Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, November the 27th, 332nd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is Humboldt County Supervisor Mark Lovelace.
Hey, how are you?
I am anxious for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm anxious for Friday, too, because we get the day off here. So, 2 days off. That's a rarity. How about for you?
Well, this is Thanksgiving week. It's always a slow week around the office without a board meeting on Tuesday. And had early Thanksgiving dinner with my side of the family last week and down in San Jose, and looking forward to tomorrow with my wife's family up here. And
So you're beating the traffic.
Yeah.
Instead of doing it the other way. And
there you go, yeah.
See, yes, as you spend Halloween. Oh, so. On the asphalt. This afternoon, we got a bunch of different things to talk about. Last week, many of the supervisors were at the CSAC meeting. We'll talk a little bit about that. Some of the state fees that we've heard of over the last little while are now beginning to kick in, or almost about to kick in. So we'll talk a little bit about what you can expect and phone numbers of those people that you want to make phone calls to, and those numbers of those that probably won't serve your needs. I'm trying to give you a little cover here, Mark. Water rights, Williamson Act, all kinds of stuff. We'll talk about it when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 319. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace, but before we do our quote this afternoon, let's see if this is a Turkey Day quote. It's, well, I don't know, I suppose it could be. Quote, this is from Andre Gide. Gide? Almost sounds Australian, doesn't it?
Gide?
Yeah, G-I-D-E, you figure it out.
Yeah.
Quote, believe those who are seeking the truth, doubt those who find it. Yeah, no kidding. And we could say absolutely, too, which normally stays, you know, absolute truth, all that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you ready for tomorrow?
Yeah, looking forward to it. As I said, yeah, it's always nice to take a break and spend a day with family and without so many of the distractions that we have on, you know, a day-to-day basis.
So apparently your football team isn't playing tomorrow. Or basketball anymore. I know they've even got a bunch of the college kids now playing on Thanksgiving Day, which is a little interesting.
Unfortunate that there's, you know, a lot of people who, I mean, athletes, professional athletes, they're getting paid well enough to work on Thanksgiving. That's fine. But, you know, that Thanksgiving has now become a shopping day itself. And, you know, that a lot of people at the lower end of the economic scale are now, you know, being forced to work on Thanksgiving. And that's, that's a frustration. It would be nice to really have that as, you know, as a day that's truly for family and doesn't get that kind of interference.
I have heard some of the stores are making a big deal that they aren't open, and others are saying because sales have been so slow this year that they can't afford, and this is such a concentrated holiday window that they can't afford not to miss one. I'm sympathetic, obviously, on both sides of that one. It's just unfortunate that anybody's put in that kind of a position where they have to make that decision.
Yeah, well, it kind of becomes a question of if it's just generally agreed upon in our culture or society that it's a day off and you don't shop, you know, you don't have it as a shopping day, then everyone's on the same basis. But as soon as you get the big stores kicking off sales early or whatever on Thanksgiving, then, you know, a lot of the little guys feel like they have to compete or they're going to lose a really valuable shopping day. And it's,
well, there was even Black Friday sales last weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and you know, there are going to be lines of people.
Yeah.
And okay, I would, for me, I would rather have somebody open at 8 or 9 o'clock at night than I would opening at 1 in the morning. You know, that I just.
Yeah.
It's a, it's a cultural there will still thing be I'm thing, not participating with.
There will still be things on the shelf the next day. There,
I would presume
I'm pretty
so.
Sure there will be.
I'll probably be checking in on Monday or Tuesday.
And you can always buy stuff online, too, if you really, really...
it kind of beats the buy local, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, but...
Being the recipient of sales tax in this equation, you might want to shoot yourself in the foot.
But if the only thing you're doing is trying to compete for the best price on the item that everyone has to have and that's going to run out on day one because of the, you know...
I wonder if there is one of
those
this
demand.
Year.
I don't know. You know,
Tickle Me Elmo is already coming on.
Yeah, and Furbies and whatever, you know, I don't know. I don't know if that kind of thing's...
You're not a grandpa yet either, huh?
No.
Yeah, I figure our time is coming up yet again.
Yeah,
pay
yeah.
Pay attention to that stuff.
Eventually, so.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk a little bit about your meeting that you had last week. Everybody was down?
Four of us. Supervisor Fennell still recovering.
Well, all four of the working crew were down at CSAC with Estelle, still here.
Well, I would certainly include Estelle within the working crew. She just wasn't able to.
Oh, well, see, she's not here to defend herself, so I got to give her plenty of fodder to play with when she comes back. Was there any unifying themes, any trends, any concerns across the board that everybody from everywhere was expressing?
There were a number of different themes or different issues, were the focus of this conference. Supervisor Dave Finnegan from Del Norte County, who's been the president of CSAC, he was the outgoing president this past year, and he had wanted his past year to be the year of the child, and he'd asked counties to pass resolutions proclaiming this as the year of the child, and noting that asking us to consider the impact on our children of the decisions that we make. Beyond that, you know, in what ways we consider that, you know, obviously there's different ways someone can look at that. But you know, to really think about that and kind of gets into that seventh generation kind of idea of thinking forward and what are we leaving behind. And our board was one of the many that passed a resolution. So that was one of the themes of the conference. And Supervisor Finnegan brought that up in his outgoing.
What did Del Norte County do?
In terms of the resolution?
His effort, yeah.
Yeah, well, Supervisor Finnegan has been a longtime member. I think he was a founding member of Del Norte County's first five commission. And so he's really dedicated to causes around children. And, I think that the idea of it was more just to think of it in everyday decisions. Is this good for our children?
KINS, News and Information Time, 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. The North Coast Repertory Theater is now celebrating its 30th season with six treats for Humboldt audiences. First is the George S. Kaufman Moss Hart Pulitzer Prize-winning comedy, You Can't Take It With You. Then the musical, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, based on the Peanuts comic strip. After the holidays, there'll be a double feature straight from ancient Greece, the murderous tragedy Oedipus the King and the comedy Women in Congress. Next is the side-splitting Complete Works of William Shakespeare, a parody in which all 17 of the Bard's plays are played in 97 minutes. Late Spring features the North Coast premiere of the popular Les Miserables. The season ends with The Poor of New York, a melodrama from 1857 of the problems of a middle-class family not all that different from today's. For dates, times, and details, call 442-6278. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic organization dedicated to the people and events that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, with the CSAC gathering, I would imagine things like state budget, transfer of financial responsibilities, increasing service demands, being foisted down onto the counties. Are those almost yawners? Because they've been there so often for such a long period of time, and it impacts everybody to such an extent that you just kind of go, "Well, yeah, okay, that's part of the job."
They can be And sometimes there was one workshop I went into at the conference that, frankly, I kind of felt like there wasn't any new ground here. And this was on supposed to be on funding mechanisms for building healthy communities in terms of walkability, bikeability, these kinds of things. And for the first half hour, 45 minutes that I was in there, it seemed like it was only talking about, you know, the importance of these issues, which, you know, yeah, I've been in that workshop 10 times in the last 5 years. So that can happen to where, you know, it's, you know, you feel like you're not getting anything new out of it. Of course, there's always turnover of supervisors, you know, through elections and through new supervisors that are, you know, changes within boards of who's going down to, you know, the CSAC conference. Not so. So even though, you know, in that case, it was something that, yeah, I've heard all this before. You know, there's probably a lot of people there who hadn't.
You restrained yourself from standing up and yell, "Fresh meat, fresh meat."
So there were, I think, four different things going on concurrently at that point in the schedule. And so I, you know, found myself in a different workshop to go to. And with four of us down there, there was a lot of opportunity to, you know, share the workload and have different people going to different things so that we can bring back as much as possible.
So you guys do coordinate. I'll go to this one once you guys go to these.
I had hoped that we would coordinate a little more actively. It tended to be more of a, you know, we'll just kind of work it out down there of, you know, if we're see all three of us in a meeting, then, you know, one can get up and go to something else. But at our meeting last week, or week before, make that, I had, our board meeting, I had put something on the agenda for us to actually discuss, you know, since we're going to have four of us down there, how do we want to divide things up? And that idea didn't really get any traction.
And you can't do that just in the hallway because of the Brown Act?
Oh, you can, but it just seemed like, you know, having that discussion with the four of us and with the public there, and in advance, it seemed like it might be helpful. And it seemed like it would also, you know, perhaps be helpful to be able to say, what are the specific issues that are going to be, you know, in this committee meeting here, in this committee meeting there, so that the board could perhaps provide guidance to whoever's going to go there. You're going to be taking up this issue, and, you know, we'd like to see, you know, here's what we think is important and what we'd like to see you, you know, take up.
Are these like roundtable workshops, or is it a lecture audience kind
they,
of
they vary.
Dynamic?
The workshops are generally a one-way download where the audience is, you know, hearing information from a speaker or a panel discussion. And then, of course, there will, you know, be questions and answers and such. But it's usually a class, essentially. There's also policy committee meetings, which are, you know, the real nuts and bolts work of CSAC, where you know, the staff are constantly working on refining policy in how they're going to be advocating, because you know, we touch base as an organization. We touch base with CSAC staff twice a year at the annual conference and the legislative conference, and the rest of the time they're acting upon the direction and priorities that they're given to try to do what's in the best interest of California counties. And so that's our opportunity to really clarify with CSAC staff on this issue. This is the position that the body wants you to take. And here's an issue that we think is important, and we want you to push for this, and we want you to, you know, oppose that, or, you know, whatever it might be. But the policy committee.
So this isn't a fact finding exclusively. This is you guys giving direction also.
Yeah.
The next period of time on specific issues.
Yeah, on issues. And so the policy committees have an agenda of a number of issues that they're asking the supervisors to weigh in on. And then those issues ultimately, at the end of the conference, go to the board of directors meeting that follows, and they present the issues. You know, here's what we heard at our meeting, and this is what the members present said, and the board of directors, you know, 9 times out of 10 says, yes, you know, do that. Occasionally there will be an issue where, you know, there was movement from the body to take up something the board of directors says, you know, that happened last year when I was trying to push for CSAC to take an active role in calling for regulation around the environmental impacts of marijuana cultivation. And while the Ag and Natural Resources Committee was willing to advance that to the Board of Directors, the Board of Directors itself felt the topic was too hot or too divisive and chose not to act on it.
So it's information gathering both directions.
Yeah.
For staff also.
Yeah.
That doesn't preclude supervisors individually or supervisors in an area to continue to have contact with CSAC staff.
Oh, not at all. But CSAC staff are directed by the board of directors with input from the whole body. And so, you know, as long as we're, you know, we can help inform them of that, but we can't provide direction to them uniquely.
KINS News and Information Times 3:30. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Supervisor Mark Lovelace. Mark, I would think that CSAC, these meetings would be an opportunity to blast away, bring in ideas, have some enthusiasm, pick up off of others. Certainly the Brown Act wouldn't qualify if you didn't stick around with the folks from your county. Consensus building, things of that nature, mm-hmm. and really try to express opinions strongly to staff or to any of the state electeds that might have made a wrong turn and walk into the room by mistake. and to kind of get together a voice and say, we're getting creamed here, or this is good stuff, or have you thought about these? Does any of that enthusiasm come out of these meetings?
Yeah, sometimes, and you know, there are state officials that do come to some of the sessions or some of the general sessions more often, and so there is an opportunity to have good discussion with them at the Ledge Conference, the Legislative Conference, which happens in Sacramento back in June. There was an update on the SRA fee, the state responsibility area fee that, you know, I know you and your listeners are familiar with. That's the $150 fee assessed on certain rural properties for fire prevention, not fire protection, fire prevention.
No, that got reset to the rural areas, not inside the incorporated municipality.
Yes, yes. It's the state responsibility area is a pre-existing designation. It's a line, you know, that surrounds all of the areas that are outside of cities and certain populated unincorporated areas. So it's not only the non-cities, but it's
some of the service districts are.
Yeah, yeah. Know. And so it's the issue is that the line wasn't created for the purpose it's being used for with this fee. That's one of the big issues. And this is something that I was able to have a bit of discussion with some top folks from CAL FIRE at the legislative conference. And so we were able to have that exchange and have a discussion about, you know, we know that fire prevention is an important function, and we know that, you know, it can't happen without a dedicated funding source. And so we recognize that needs to happen, but this is an inappropriate mechanism for doing that. And so we had some discussions about how can we look at refining that boundary. If this is what it's going to be used for, let's figure out, you know, what should that boundary be and perhaps move it to an area that really does reflect folks that are outside of service districts, outside of, you know, higher density communities. And outside of fire, you know, their own fire protection districts.
So what is the status of that right now?
Well, that fee was put in place, 2 years ago, implemented fully last year, and this year now it becomes subject to inflation. And so people are going to be seeing on their next SRA fee bill an actual increase. It's a small one. It's $2.33. But knowing that people are very frustrated about this in the first place, I'm sure that's just going to add to that frustration.
Is there a place for those folks to share their frustration?
Yes. There has been, knowing the opposition and the frustration, there has been a procedure for folks to be able to challenge the fee and to complain about the fee, but they're still told, but you need to pay the fee. And so it's kind of adds to the frustration to say, yes, you can state your frustration and your disagreement and challenge, you're having to pay the fee, but in the meantime, you got to keep paying it until something changes. Well, one of the things that that's changing here is, since being instituted, the fees collected over $26 million that has yet to be spent on actual fire prevention efforts.
Oh, so there's just a fund at this point.
Yeah, about a little less than half of that, I think $11.7 million is scheduled to be spent on inspections and fire prevention and various efforts in the coming year. But again, that just adds to it when people see that this money is being collected without being utilized or being fully utilized. On top of that, at the time the fee was put in place, pushed through the legislature, the state was in a serious economic crisis. And the state has been pulling out, and this year is projected to have, I think, a $2.6 billion, $2.4 billion budget surplus. And so when you're talking $26 million, that's a very small piece of that. Perhaps it's time to revisit that. One of the things that adds as a complication to this is Prop 26 from 2010, which was, one of the reasons that this became a fire prevention fee instead of a fire protection fee, is fire protection is, benefits the public broadly, benefits the people of the state of California, and would qualify as a tax. And a tax under Prop 26 requires a two-thirds vote of the people, or of the legislature, and that would not get through. That would have not gotten through. And so they were able to say this is actually something to benefit individual property owners by doing, fire prevention work, and therefore it's a fee. A fee is when it benefits an individual person or property owner rather than the public broadly. So they were able to put it through on that. Now, however, if we look at taking away that fee, we now have a service which is being paid by a fee that would be picked up by the taxpayers generally, and thus under Prop 26, if it goes away, it has become a backdoor new tax, because what was once being paid by the individual property owners is now being picked up by the taxpayers generally. So it's a weird double-edged sword, and that's something that's going to have to be worked through if we want to see this fee go away or find a more appropriate way to pay for fire prevention and fire protection, which are two things that we really need to take seriously, and we do need to find a funding mechanism for them, but this is not it.
Is the state fire department underfunded?
Cal Fire?
Yeah.
Well, Cal Fire has in the past not had dedicated funding for what it's doing, and it's been funding that's come from, again, general taxes and property taxes, and it's that's something that the state has, because of the resistance to taxes, there's been a move towards fees instead, where people pay in proportion to the benefit that they receive, rather than say, we all benefit from this, let's all pay for it. And that gets very difficult to find, the actual nexus of how much is this person benefiting versus that person.
I'm just saying, whatever the figure is, if it's 25 or 30 million, mm-hmm. whatever it is, why not have the legislature on their own say, we want to have X amount or X percent or however they would want to define it, earmarked specifically for this department. Mm-hmm. I mean, they kind of do it for Caltrans. They kind of do it for CHP. Why not for the mm-hmm. fire?
Well, there's very complex rubrics. I don't know for how funding is allocated for any of these departments. There's always some amount that's formula and some amount that is given to them to have some authority over, but it has to be allocated competitively. And, you know, we just had a workshop on that, in fact, or not a workshop, but a discussion of that at the Housing, Land Use, and Transportation Policy Committee in terms of looking at some ways to increase funding for road maintenance and other transportation infrastructure in California.
That would be the old gas tax dollars? STIP and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, this was going to be an increase to possible increase to the gas tax and how it would be allocated, 25% based on population, 25% based on road miles, and you know, just it had a really complex formula of how this would be allocated, and a formula which, quite frankly, gave me a lot of concern when I saw that 40, you know, one of those pieces, you know, 25% allocated this way, 25% allocated this way, 25% allocated that way. One of those pots of 25%, of that 25%, 60% would go to Southern California and 40% would go to Northern California. And that's bad enough. And then you find out that Southern California begins at Tehachapi.
Yeah, the definition.
I asked, what is your definition of Southern California? And was told that line is at Tehachapi. And folks, that is not Northern California.
No, that's where the accent kicks in, though. KINS, News and Information Times 344. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 347. We're back talking shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, water rights, water use, water seems to be more and more of a topic at the statewide level. Are you seeing any momentum, any development, any clarification, anything that we don't hear from the water district?
Well, we did have another a workshop on water issues in California. This was actually a dialogue between counties, which was a good roundtable format. Before I jump to that, I did want to say one last thing on the SRA fee so that people know that our Board of Supervisors has expressed its opposition to those fees on down the line. We've continued to be very involved in trying to oppose those fees and trying to get something changed on them. We occasionally hear from people saying, why aren't we hearing more from our board? Just want to let folks know that our board is unanimously opposed to the fees and has been continuing to try to do something about it. Back to water. This roundtable format was set up very carefully because water is something that really does have the potential to divide California's counties because there's you look at it very differently depending on if you're an area of origin or an area of need. And when I had come onto the board of CSAC on behalf of the county, I found that one of the policies that they had was a policy just noted CSAC recognizes that to meet the demands of the state of California, some redistribution of water from areas of need to areas of origin to areas of need may be necessary. And it basically gave up that argument right from the get-go. And working on that over a period of years was able to get that policy changed and removed so that we're no longer giving up our water as the starting point for discussion.
If somebody wants to monitor water issues in the state, is there a single clearinghouse that they can go to?
There's a number of good websites for water issues, and quite frankly, none of them are, you know, the URLs aren't coming to mind right off the top of my head here.
But maybe an email to you?
Yeah.
You might be able to.
Yeah, if people are interested in tracking those issues. But there's so much information on it that it's really hard to track the entire thing. It's a matter of figuring out which discrete piece can we take on and can we push for, and protecting our own water rights is definitely going to be job one.
We're eating the elephant. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
You too.
We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more. Well, we'll have football tomorrow afternoon. We'll be still have a show on the website. Join us for Friday, more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day, and enjoy your Thanksgiving.